Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
All right, you are in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. Let's go around the NFL, and my goodness, whoo, y'all got a lot of embarrassment from the parental units.
Yes.
Wow. I want to read more of them. I will read some of them, and you know what I might do is I'll try and sprinkle it in as we go around the NFL here, because wow, there's a lot of embarrassment. Like someone who brought back some memories for me, not quite the same memories, but just like going shopping with your moms. Because they were like, my mom took my husky self and made me, they said they made their mother made them change in the husky section, like take their shirt off in front of people and such. I'm like, oh, wow. Yeah, that's disconcerting. Yeah, there's a lot of these. We'll get to these as we continue.
Another underrated one is hold my purse.
Oh, yes.
As a kid?
Oh, yes.
Man. Like, as a grown man, it's still a little bit uncomfortable.
Yeah, so I feel like
you can make
man.
It look cool. You can make it look cool.
Oh, yeah. You don't care what the deal is.
But as,
you
do a kid,
as a kid, it's just nonstop.
Look at their Cersei. It's just like, come on, man.
All right. How about this from the 832? If your son's action resulted in a $350,000 fine, how would you deal with that? That is a question that Jeff Ulbricht is having to figure out as
today.
He need
to embarrass his son. Mm-hmm. He need to get in on this segment.
Yeah, maybe
take some notes.
We need to find out what that embarrassment is. Like, is he about to do the tried and true punishment of, hey, take these scissors right here, go cut the grass or something like that, right? Like, are we go, what kind
go
of
hold
punishment?
This purse.
How many times do you have to cut the grass to pay off $250,000?
When you say the grass, what is the grass?
Well,
is it the neighborhood?
Exactly. Is it,
are we cutting all the family's grass in the area? Are we cutting the grass at the facility?
How much it costs to cut grass?
I don't know these days.
Yeah, I don't know.
About regular yard, about $45.
When I used to do it, as a kid in high school, it was $20. Probably $45 now.
Don't make me think about the economy. It hurts. I feel it.
So the Falcons got fined $250,000.
Yes, the Falcons got a $250,000 fine.
His dad got fined.
And the defense coordinator, Jeff Ulbricht himself, $100,000. And it was specifically for failing to prevent the disclosure of confidential information.
And no coordinators don't be getting paid a lot like that.
They
be getting paid
$100,000? Yeah.
A coordinator can fine $100,000?
Oh, he's going to feel that. Don't get me wrong.
That's what I'm saying. Like, it's one thing if it was a player getting fined. They making millions and millions of dollars.
They'll make $1 to $2 million by and large. Sometimes a lot more, but $100,000 is a big chunk of a million.
That's a big chunk of a million. No, and that hurt right there, man.
And I still feel bad for him because I think he did.
Who, to DC?
Yes. It was in his own home. It was, he was there working, waiting to get the call for advice or, whatever his assessment of a particular player. And he just had in his house, he had his, little notebook there, and the kid just got it. Like, I don't blame him, man. Nah, you should feel okay there.
No, nah, it's not his fault because he had no idea his kid would do something like that. Mm-hmm. Now I'm sure that office is locked. He said, you cannot come in here at all.
You can't even stay in the house.
Yeah, I do not trust you.
Yeah.
Well, there's all of that in there and whatever. Jeff Ulbricht will try and do to get his son to realize that, hey, you cannot do that and you won't do that ever again. Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk, took this to a different direction. I want to see if this is something that you kind of understand or if you're just willing to
they
wipe
should
it
adopt
away.
The Falcons draft picks for the next 2 years.
No. There were people that were debating what the punishment ultimately should be. Obviously, we know it's a fine, but one of the things that he was talking about is that this might highlight in some ways, like gambling issues. Like, obviously, I think that this one, that's one of the reasons why you absolutely need
actually, to. Actually, I don't mind that.
Like, do you see the potential, like, flaws when you talk about a relative looseness with information and the ways in which that can affect gambling? Because one of the things that I know for certain is the one thing you can't do in any of these circumstances in these businesses is mess with the money. And gambling, like, the gambling money messes with the money when we start talking about the integrity.
I got to tell you, usually it's an eye roll with, you know, with Pro Football Talk. I actually don't mind that. I think that's a pretty good point.
I think it might be be overstated here because I don't know how far you can take that particular assumption on. But I think that that's probably why they needed to make sure that they operated with swiftness in some level of discipline here. And if you consider that, do you feel like the discipline is sufficient?
If you consider that, I think you maybe get it a little more for the Falcons. You know, because they're not going to mess around with that. But I still feel bad for Ulbricht. I mean, that's awful.
Yeah, definitely. Some other parents' embarrassing stories that have come in on the text line. Someone said that their mom used to carry around a wooden spoon in her purse and was not afraid to whip it out when they were acting like a fool. Someone else said from the 713, they were 14. Their mom took them to the office Christmas party and made them take a picture on Santa's lap. That picture, to this day, is their mother's profile picture on Facebook.
That is so good. How about this one from the Bat Phone, Captain Scott and the Bite Me podcast? So he found out that his daughter was, quote, air quotes like the morning show, going to study at school early, but he realized that she was not going to study. She was just going to go hang out with kind of the bad element or, you know, someone that he didn't approve of. So he drove her to school in an extra tight T-shirt, coach's shorts. Remember those?
Oh, yeah.
Coach's shorts. And do you remember
the huggers?
Yes, the huggers, showing everything. And do you remember the titty sandals?
The hoops?
They had like those rubber cords around them and all that stuff.
What I heard was concerning to me. Are you over there? You good over there?
That's what they were called. Okay, all right. That's what they were called. Ooh, it's a brand name.
I will get back to around the NFL.
Disgusting,
where
disgusting. So that needless to say, problem solved.
Yeah, definitely. There was some the embarrassment work there. The NFL and Nike announcing what they're calling their rivalries line or program. And this is basically what I think they're bringing the City Connect idea from baseball and basketball possibly to the NFL. The program apparently will elevate rivalry games is what they're saying. And part of it is to, you know, have these rivalries uniforms included in the team's lineup for 3 years after introduction. So, you know, you get it and you have it for three seasons. They're going to start with the AFC South. They will start with introduce it, I believe, AFC South and NFC North. Yeah, will debut their uniforms in 2026. So you can expect a specific kind of uniform built in a different way for these types of games.
How?
Starting in 2026.
I wonder.
What do you mean when you say
like
how?
What is a rivalry uniform?
Yeah, I'm not quite sure exactly. It's designated for games within the division. I think AFC East and NFC West are going to start it this year. So we'll get an idea of what they are. But it seems like they're building like that same City Connect idea where the identity is not going to be nearly as tied to the brand identity that we've seen. I'm kind of really concerned about what this ultimately looks like.
I think the NFL liked what the Houston Texans did with their I don't want to call it City Connect, but their H-Town uniforms. And I think they want to get other teams to do that, to kind of tap into the city. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, the H-Town jerseys are very city connected, where little details and all this other stuff is connected to the city. I think they're trying to get other cities to tap into their city, they'd probably just use them whenever they play their play in division.
The one thing I like about this is the possibility of H-Town blue jersey.
Like truly?
Because keep in mind, City Connect, you have totally different colors.
Yeah.
You know, witness the Astros.
Right.
Yeah. Like you can, so it almost, it could be, I'm not saying it is because I don't know what it is. Like I
said,
but it could be, this is kind of the loophole that the Texans could use to come out full, you know, old school oiler blue.
Yeah, especially since the Titans are supposedly saying that they're not going to go that route anymore.
Salute to them for that too, by the way. Like them jerseys, look, I love the look, but them jerseys are cursed, man. Like nothing good happened in them jerseys, man.
Yeah, but a very strong possibility that Nike had a strong strong decision in this. Obviously, we've seen them do this in the NBA, do this in MLB, and also like it's just another opportunity to make money. Like, if you have another set of jerseys that are utilized maybe once or twice a season, now what are we getting to? 3-4 different jerseys, which I think also will include different helmets. Like, we're just
they'll buy them.
More merch to be sold. Yeah, that absolutely feels like that is in the offing when it comes to that. So we'll keep an eye out for what that ultimately looks like when you get to that point. Did you see this? I mean, you're a fantasy football player, aren't you? Like,
I think
a lot of us are. Very few folks operate like me, where it's just like I kind of actually feel it. It's a little bit of a distraction for me personally because I get too invested in my individual players and it takes me away from the game at large. However, fantasy football players immediately are in the place that I think fantasy baseball players were a few years back when they go, hey, this guy that's going to play both ways, how does that work?
Yeah.
Like, where does that factor in? So teams are, I guess, providers like Yahoo Sports are already clarifying how this will work where – you know, some leagues, if it's just kind of the offensive league, it'll probably work the way that you typically want to. But there's some leagues that have defensive players that individually that can be selected. Apparently, if you're an offensive player league, he'll be available drafted as a wide receiver. And if you're a league that has defensive players, he'll be available as both a wide receiver and a cornerback. So he will earn both the offensive and defensive scoring, regardless of which side of the ball you roster him at. So if you put him on, like, as a
wide receiver, he doesn't get just what I'm listening to, what I'm hearing here, and tell me if you agree. It's you're not just getting defensive points if, like, the Jaguars score a defensive touchdown. You're getting Travis Hunter points, too.
Yes.
That's huge.
Yes.
That's huge.
Yes.
Taysom Hill was about the closest to that we've seen in recent years. Is he in fantasy sports? Is he a tight end?
Yeah.
Is he a quarterback? Is he a running back? You know, whatever. And they ultimately let him just be Taysom Hill.
Yes.
You know,
I think I saw him put in there as like a tight end, but I guess a utility of sorts.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, like that feels like it's cheating, ain't it?
Yeah. He's vaulting up draft boards.
Yeah, I was going to say, where you got him going right now? Way too early draft board.
I don't think he would be a first rounder. You know, you got to go with the proven players.
I don't know, man. Draft. Like, with modern draft, fantasy football draft strategy where folks are getting wide receivers pretty early, considering that those guys can have huge impacts on the game.
I'd put
if you're playing in one of those leagues that has that.
If we're doing the draft right now and we're in the second round and he's there.
Oh, yeah.
You grabbing him second round?
I wouldn't. There are too many really good proven players in the first round. And some of our fantasy players who know more than I do might argue, but they might say he's the third round, but I'd put him in the second round. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Especially because I think that an undercurrent of all of this is how will he hold up?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't mean to lay this on too thick, but again, like relatively smaller frame or body, I guess, for the time being jumping in. And if they do try and run him out with all of those snaps, on both, whether it's, you know, primarily offensively, which it does seem like primarily offensively with some defensive packages, that's still a lot in this sport. And, you know, I knock on wood because I don't want to see this for him. But if injuries pop up, does that then – I mean, that clearly you lose him for some time when it comes to
that
your fantasy.
Getting individual points as a cornerback, that's a game changer, man.
Sure. But, I mean –
that is a game changer.
I think that if I was – I don't even know what the percentage is on it, but I would take a guess that we're talking about less than a fifth.
Yeah, how many pick sixes is he using?
Well, not even that, but I'm just like less than probably a fifth of fantasy leagues have defensive players as well. Usually I think the stock is just kind of have
it's
offense and
defense,
then the defense and special teams combined into one, I guess, player of sorts.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I just found that to be interesting. That is something to look forward to if you are a fantasy player. And also, let's do a little TV ratings. Everybody loves TV ratings, right?
Everybody loves it.
Yeah, just if they can validate your feelings on things, then there they are. Day 3 of the NFL draft, we got numbers in. Average 4.3 million viewers when it comes to Shador, who obviously fell into round 5, which it was in day 3. That is an average, or it is up 43% versus late round coverage last year. And I feels like that is pretty evidently because of what happened there. Now, one thing that I did find interesting within this that I wanted to note is that first round viewership, or we do know that first round viewership was up 27% on the ESPN family and networks, but it was up significantly more on NFL Network. I do wonder if that speaks to the idea that people got sick of Mel Kiper.
Yes.
Yeah. 100%.
Absolutely. It does. Yeah. I switched over. Did y'all switch over?
Well, I was muted at that point. I had visuals and not audio.
I think I was watching NFL Network most of the
time. Well, we watched, obviously, y'all guys were at my house. We watched, you know, the regular ESPN coverage the first night. Second night, I switched over. Second day, I switched over.
Yeah. Because they weren't even talking about the draft picks at that point.
No.
They were just talking about Shador.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, all right, man, like, we don't need this type of think piece on here right now, man.
No, we don't.
Yeah, so. And 832 says an interception only worth 2 points unless we're expecting him to have a couple pick sixes that shouldn't factor in.
Right.
I will expose myself as not having played nearly as many of the defense, or actually really any of these leagues that have individual defensive players. But I have a feeling that there's more scoring than simply like interceptions when you talk about individual defense.
And even that is important because usually the defense gets interceptions. So if you don't have their defense, but you do have Shador Sanders, you get 2 points. I mean, it's big. It's big.
Right. I mean, if you get that additional value. All right. Mm-hmm. That's around the NFL here in the loop on Sports Radio 610. Coming up next, let's circle back around and talk about the Texans. We talked about the earlier picks, the ones that are big, right? The Iowa State boys, Ariante Ursary. But when it comes to the late round pick or maybe even undrafted free agent types, who do you think is most set up to make a splash for this Texans team this year? 713-572-4610. Let's discuss that next.
All right, Len.
All right, I'm seeing this per Chandler Rome of The Athletic. We were talking about it. We've actually been talking about it since camp, the possible return of this man, and now we have a date. Lance McCullers Jr. will start for the Astros on Sunday versus the Chicago White Sox. That was as of 15 minutes ago. And so, Lance McCullers Jr. has all but completed the road to recovery, the road that will see him pitch in the majors for the first time since, what was that, 23?
22.
Was it 22?
2022. His last start was in 2022 in October, and it was...
How'd he do in that start?
He lost 3-0, was pulled early, if I remember correctly. He got 6 innings in. October of 2022. No. That's regular season. I need to look at his playoff season.
There you go.
His playoff numbers. But nevertheless, 2022 was his last time.
Yeah, so there you go. That's huge news for the Astros in that Lance McCullers Jr. is, he's within sight. Mm-hmm. Within sight of getting on the mound. And the reason why I'm not fully taking the victory lap is that there are some days between now and Sunday. But it does look like Lance McCullers Jr. has largely made the recovery and we'll be ready to get back into the rotation for the Astros. I think it'll be interesting to see like where he slots into the rotation and maybe who eventually makes their way out of the rotation. There is some thought that maybe you could go to a six-man
I think they
rotation
will.
for the short period of time.
Yeah, this signals that. And, yeah, it was in the 2022 postseason, and that's the one where he was pulled early after 3 innings. But, Lance McCullers Jr., long road back. It'll be his first start in that many years.
There you go. And don't do that, Texas Misfit, on the YouTube page. They said bullpen better be ready for heavy inning Sunday. Don't do that. He stretched out. He's given you 5 pretty much every damn time that he gets out here for these rehab starts. And the velocity has been good. He's, you know, the stuff has looked pretty solid, and so excited to see what he looks like once he gets to the majors. Plus, after 911 days, I feel like the White Sox ain't the worst place to start, right? Like the White Sox, although to be fair, I feel like the Colorado Rockies might be going under paid attention to when it comes to possibly putting up one of the worst baseball seasons that we've seen from a team. But the White Sox ain't really that much better. So, man, get an opportunity to get out here against a team that I don't think is all that great and get yourself back into playing shape, man. Get yourself back into that groove. So, again, Lance McCullers Jr. set to start for your Astros on Sunday. Let's circle back around. Let's get back to the Texans. Let's do this at least quickly, get into this, because we've talked a lot about Higgins and Noel and Ariante Ursary, the first 3 selections that the Texans made in the draft last week. In fact, those guys have been praised a ton. I think Tom McShay has loved it. There's been other draft scouts and draft media folks that have really praised the top end of the draft. And then there's some questions from some people about what they did afterwards, some of the trades and the values that they had in some of those other places. But when it comes to those players, when it comes to potential camp bodies or, you know, undrafted free agents that they've signed a few of those, who is set up to make a splashier Lopez.
Yeah, look, Arian Foster is like our Tom Brady. You know, he was undrafted.
That's right.
He was an undrafted free agent. How'd that work out? It happens. It happens a lot. If not to that degree, it happens where you get some lower round picks, some undrafted guys that are, you know, frankly, you know, opportunity is the number one thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you have an opportunity, if there's a place on the roster where, you know, there's possibilities, the number one thing becomes that. And I think, I feel, I don't know what you're curious about or what you think might happen here, but I feel, okay, I'll start with the most recent news. Jake Andrews.
Yeah, Jake Andrews, who mm-hmm. offensive lineman, drafted in 2023 to the Patriots, or actually he played with the Patriots, mm-hmm. And he was injured during the entirety of last year, so he did not play there. But he started, I believe, 13 games, or played 13 games.
He played in 16 games. He started one. Started one is what I saw this morning. Maybe it's wrong, but when I was digging in on this, I think that's what the numbers – it doesn't matter. Didn't start a lot. Played in a few, one season, then tore his meniscus. And frankly, the story out of New England is he just kind of got passed. He got passed by other guys, you know, on the interior offensive line. He's just 25.
Right.
So
drafted in the same draft that you had Juice Scruggs and Jarrett Patterson. Mm-hmm. And interestingly enough, all of those guys pretty, at least if you were inclined to look at Dane Brugler's pre-draft evaluations as I am, mm-hmm. All those guys kind of rated in that same area when it comes to, you know, possibly being sixth round kind mm-hmm. of grades. Obviously, we know Scruggs went way higher. And, you know, Jake Andrews, I think, just a little bit after Patterson as well. And those guys, I mean, or actually, no, he was a fourth rounder, if my memory serves. But, yeah, he looks like he can play.
Mm-hmm.
And this feels like another instance of giving us an idea of what this offense or what this team is doing offensive line-wise, which is kind of just throwing guys in there of a certain caliber, to be fair, and seeing which of these guys kind of grab hold of the position.
And he had a New England zip code at one point. So that doesn't ever hurt him.
Yeah.
You know, here. But he's played center. He's played guard. So there's opportunity there. A couple of guys that – okay, well, I'll mention this one first. I'm not like his fan club or anything. I'm just looking at, you know, what they have and what they like to do, what we think they're going to like to do offensively. They're going to use a lot of tight ends. We know the blocking has been an issue. Luke Lachey, I feel, as a blocker, that's his go-to. He's going to at least have a look. He's going to get a serious look as maybe a second or third tight end in some of these situations. But the ones that are interesting to me are some of their undrafted free agents, and we haven't really talked about them a lot.
Mm-hmm.
When you come to opportunity, Junior Tafuna, who we all have probably seen him play and make plays. He went to Utah. They've had a couple of good seasons here in the last couple of years. He's a pass rushing type defensive tackle. Some people had him, you know, rated in the fifth or sixth round. He fell out and was signed. Defensive tackle is opportunity, man. That's an opportunity with this club.
Yeah, mm-hmm. For sure. Especially if you can get up the field. And one thing that we know about this team is that they're not afraid to let, you mm-hmm. know, maybe guys who don't have as big of a profile get opportunities in there. Plus, they like rotating guys mm-hmm. on that defensive line. So you can find yourself in a space like our guy Toji Ai did last year and ended up being beneficial, especially in a space where it feels like you need bodies and you need or at least you could use bodies. And if you play up to a certain level, there's an opportunity there. Plus, and I hate to be the person who brings some negativity, are we certain that Sheldon Rankins is still playing at that same level? Like, would there be a possibility of that opening up some level of opportunities for him as well? So, mm-hmm. I mean, if the young man comes in and if he does have, as you mentioned, if he has the ability to get up the field and press the pocket, that's what we were talking about when we talked about the possibility of needing interior offensive line. Yes, mm-hmm. somebody that can help stop the run matters, but also that's, I think, elevation that could have helped this defensive line like it wasn't incredible last year, but could have pushed it to another level is now if you're getting some pressure from the interior mm-hmm. as well in a different level and on top of what Settle did and obviously Mario Edwards early last season, you take this to a whole different level.
Yeah, and this is another interesting one to me. If you go back and look at the combine scores, had one of the top five combine scores in several categories, but went undrafted. And that's Eli Cox. He was another interior, and he actually played everywhere, but another offensive lineman, went to Kentucky and was also in that fifth, sixth round category, but scored real well physically. And, oh, by the way, we talk a lot about Cole Popovich, the offensive line coach. The assistant offensive line coach is Zach Yenser, who coached Cox at Kentucky for 2 years.
Mm.
So he's very familiar with his work.
There's a couple of guys that have some that you would imagine have some level of familiarity that you have here that you wonder, does that then I have a hard time getting to a place where I think those guys trouble the possibility of Jared Patterson or Juice Scruggs for center. Because you mentioned, obviously, Andrews has played center, and then Eli Cox, obviously, is a center. But I have a hard time thinking that. Are you in that same space where you go, those guys are probably entrenched to a certain degree, not saying that they're
entrenched is the word, but they certainly have the advantage.
Or they have such an advantage that it's going to be hard for those guys to make it up is probably a more accurate way of saying that. Do you feel that similar way?
I do, but I also feel like we can't say who's going to be the either guard or the center at this point. We're leaning toward Titus at left guard, of course. But center and right guard, I can't tell you who it's going to be, who I think it's going to be. I have my hunches. But there's opportunity there, and that's what we talk about.
Yeah, and so it does feel like they're just going to – the text here probably says it in a way that I would. Offensive line philosophy is accuracy by volume. They're just a lot of different guys in there and seeing which of these guys hold up. And, yes, also Ladarius Henderson is in there. In fact, I know that Nick Caserio, talking to Kay Adams today, gave a update about Ladarius Henderson, so I feel like we'll have to hear some of that later on. But yeah, you're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. So I guess we didn't ultimately get to the place where which one of those guys do you feel like is best situated to possibly add to this team and impact what's happening here?
I think Jake Andrews and Junior Tafuna would be my picks, simply because Tafuna offers something that I think you've talked about, and you know, pressing the pocket and all that. He's a pass rushing guy, not huge. He's not that anchor. He's like 300, 305 pounds, but he's got some moves. He's moved outside a little bit. Maybe a poor man's Danico Autry type, you know, along those lines. And then Jake Andrews, we just went through it all. The guy had a meniscus, got it beat out, got passed, but at some point they liked him.
So you aren't feeling that way about Keontae Hamilton, the seventh rounder, when you talk about defensive tackle?
I mean, he's going to be in the mix with him.
But he also, we were talking about it, he seems like he also profiles as more like an upside guy. I do wonder how much of that you see immediately. Mm-hmm. But just more interesting things to look at for when camp comes around, to get an eye on what these guys are and what kind of depth this Texans team has built for themselves. You're in the loop right here on Sports Radio 610. Coming up next, let's get into what's popping. We'll circle back around to the idea that Lance McCullers Jr. is on the cusp of returning to the Astros. But also, what the hell is happening with Bill Belichick at UNC? We'll get more into that next. All right, yeah, you're in the loop right here on Sports Radio 610. Let's get into what's popping on the day. And one of the big notes that's happened during our show today, we found out that Lance McCullers Jr. is on the road to being back in a very real way. Sunday, mark your calendars down. That is when Lance McCullers Jr. is expected to start against the Chicago White Sox for the Astros.
So it'll be 615 days when he starts.
915.
I mean, 915.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So 911 to today.
Yeah.
915.
Dang.
To the next time that he gets a start.
I didn't think it was possible, man.
I didn't. No, I
lost faith.
Yeah, absolutely. And no one could blame you.
You didn't believe.
Yeah, I didn't.
Here he is.
No, I didn't.
What
do you have to say for yourself?
I didn't believe.
Hey, salute. God bless. Yeah, exactly. This is a miracle.
He was just talking about it with some media there in the dugout there at Daikin as they're getting ready to play against the Tigers and finish out a 3-game set, hopefully get a sweep of the Tigers at 110. But, yeah, he was talking about it, and he said it's a day he's been waiting for a very long time. Mm-hmm. Right? In fact, actually, this is some of Lance talking about this return.
Yeah, I mean, my last two outings, I felt really good. I feel like my stuff's been pretty crisp. So, obviously, it's been a long layoff for me, and there's probably going to be things I have to work through and get my feet back under me and things of that nature. But – I feel like I'm in as good of a spot as I can be coming out of rehab. Rehab game, as you say, and I'm excited for Sunday.
Look, man, it really is. I doubted it. You doubted it. Everybody doubted it. You know, I mean, there's no shame.
I doubted it less than you, though.
You did. There's no shame in that. But it could be just an incredible story, not just for Lance, but for this team. You know, we talk about they're going to have a six-man rotation, 17 games in 17 days. Not only that, But look what it does to the trickle down of the bullpen and the starting rotation. And what if he's, you know, he's been amazing in the postseason. His regular seasons have been, you know, okay, good. I think his high in terms of wins in a regular season is like 13, something like that, 12 or 13. But at just his veteran presence and everything else.
Yeah, and I think he's expected to maybe get an opportunity at maybe like 20, 25 starts if things go well throughout the rest of this. As it seems like he believes it too. Of course, obviously he's going to have hopeful thinking in this moment.
2021, he had 13 wins. For the life of me, I don't know how I can remember that stuff, and I don't remember what I had for breakfast.
It'd be like that sometimes, man. It's That's crazy. Ultimately what it lands on. It'd be like that. Let's see if Lance McCullers remembers how to like really pitch. And I know that sounds nonsensical, but I always go back to when I have the opportunity to talk to like pitchers, they especially like guys from I don't know, maybe a decade, two decades ago, they always lament like the era of throwers, guys that just kind of throw really hard but don't have that same finesse about, you know, the way that they go about the art of
how
pitching.
To pitch, yeah.
And Lance McCullers has that. And so especially if he can get back to that quickly.
The curveball.
Yeah, you'll be in some really good spaces. And, I mean, what happens, I understand you're talking about a six-man rotation, but if you get back to a five-man rotation, especially with Spencer Arrighetti possibly returning at some point, Gusto in the pen feels incredible. Who even ends up in the pen in that circumstance if you do push someone to the pen from what you have? And is it Blanco? Is Wesneski
Gusto?
Like you? I'm already starting with Gusto, still have other guys. Depending on when Arrighetti returns, so it makes me feel even better about a starting rotation that has been incredible to this point, and an offense that is ticking up in such a way as they scored six runs yesterday to get a victory, solidify a win against the best team in the AL, at least record wise, in the Tigers, and they have an opportunity to get the sweep today, 1:10 p.m. at Daikin Park. A.J. Blueball on a mound.
It's been a long wait.
Debut for the man at the big league level, and let's see if he can kind of garner that same level of production that you've seen from other starters and give the offense a little opportunity, and hopefully the offense will have his back in a debut. That'd be huge to give him a good experience.
Yeah, no question. So this pitching staff is taking shape, and it was already one of the best, bullpen especially, you know, one of the best in the American League.
Yeah, so excited to see what that looks like. Somebody said, what about a six-man rotation? Yeah, it does feel like they'll go there at least for a period of time. Are they asking about continuing a six-man rotation? Would that be something that you'd be interested in, like a longer terms?
Yes, I don't mind it. And by the way, that's kind of been – they've done it more than other teams for these types of stretches, or even late in the year go six-man.
Well, yeah, that's also this type of stretch where you're about to have here soon a 17-game, 17-day stretch. You can get me in there completely.
But they've done it in other situations as well.
So you like the idea of doing that on a longer-term basis, maybe more throughout the season, especially seeing as this feels like you have the guys that are capable of pitching to that degree.
And they did it with Verlander because he was older and coming off an injury. Well, what's McCullers?
You know, older, coming off an injury.
Yeah, so I think they could easily do it again with him.
There you go. All right. So, that's what's happening there with the Astros. Excited for that. I'm not – all right, let's talk about this quickly.
So I know what you're looking at.
The NBA, it seems like, is considering the possibility during the All-Star break of a international format for its All-Star game, possibly a USA versus the rest of the world type situation.
You're welcome.
Citing the 2026 edition of LA moving to NBC during the middle of the Winter Olympics as one of the factors. But then also, I think this has clearly been inspired by what you saw, the Four Nations tournament that NHL put on during their All-Star break this past season. Mm-hmm. You're all in on this, right?
They took my idea.
All right, you're going to act like you made this up? You're the only one who had that?
Check the tape. And I think you were not in on it.
I wasn't. And I still don't think that it's going to be the savior that we want it to be. I feel like basketball operates in a different – the basketball audience is different than the NHL audience, especially when it comes to down the lines of nationalities or what have you, especially because I don't think that you're going to get like – individual nations, you're going to get like something like USA versus rest of world, and I don't think that there's going to garner the same attention. If you don't recall, we've been here, maybe not exactly with the All-Star game itself, the big game, but we've been there with the Rising Stars Challenge and things of that nature, And it doesn't, like, it's a novelty in this space in the NBA, in where I feel like that operate in NHL as a pseudo tournament that has a level of grasp like some of those other, like something that would be like a World Cup.
I don't think that's wrong, but it's better. It's going to be better. There's going to be, is there going to be a flag involved? Tell me if there's going to be a flag involved. There will be. That's all you need to know. They took my idea, Figgy.
I think it's going to be negligible, but we'll see. If they even implement it, this is early.
I'm just curious how the players going to react to this, because it is the All-Star break, and we see how they treat the All-Star break. They treat it as like a rest.
Sure.
So I'm just kind of curious, are they going to go all, if everybody going to go all in on it, then I think it's going to be really good.
I'll go back to what I said.
I just don't know if players going to go all in for this.
I don't know if they're going to be all in, but they're going to be in more. And it's going to be better.
Based
and that's
on
all
what?
We, and that's all. The flag, all this buzz out there about, hey, you know, Europe's got, they're putting together better players. Look at the last MVPs and all this other. They hear that. They hear that about the European influence and they're getting better and all that.
I get that.
Pride comes into play.
Yeah, no, I get that. Yeah. But
where was the pride all these other All-Star years? What are you talking about?
USA versus the world. Now,
but see, my thing is, like, that's cool when we're talking about the Olympics.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering, with All-Star break, and this is my 1 week to kind of chill, I wonder if they're going to take that as serious as like the Olympics.
Again, it'll be better.
I'm not certain of that.
Better than the other All-Star game.
I'm not certain of that. It's we've
that's not saying a lot either.
But it's better.
It isn't. But I'll even acquiesce on the idea that even if it's better, here's the one thing that I think. We've seen how many different attempts at finagling the All-Star game in various different sports, mind you, but particularly the NBA. And whatever gains you might even get are often rather marginal or short-lived, and probably both at the same time. So, okay, run this out here, and maybe I can understand the idea of, hey, we're just going to find what our gimmick is for right now and see if that works for a little bit before we have to find our next gimmick. But I don't think that it's a long-term fix, one. But two, I still very much maintain that you don't have that same, like, you don't have that same national draw in basketball as you do in some of the, like, especially in hockey.
I don't know about that.
I don't think
some of these
internet,
even, I'm not even talking about the Olympics, some of these international world championships and stuff, they go nuts for that. I watch it religiously.
Yeah, they go, especially I think the teams elsewhere go nuts. I think our American relationship
I think
with
American players do.
Our American relationship with national basketball is, we are waiting for you to do the thing that we expect of you, and if you don't, we will come at you with pitchforks and fire, as opposed to a level of celebration, which I think you're talking about with these other nations, but you're not going to be able to feel those other nations completely because you don't have enough of those players, so they're going to end up in subsets that I don't think garner the same level of excitement as you're thinking.
I don't know. I'm going to be interested to watch it.
Oh, yeah. If they bring this up, it'll be an interesting data point to see if there's anything that can be done for the All-Star game. And I'm starting to get to the point where I'm like, I don't think they're saving the All-Star game in the way that we're trying to save the All-Star game.
Yeah, I will say this is better than, to me, doing the one-on-one thing.
Sure.
Because I don't think the one-on-one thing will work out right.
Yeah, that's a Saturday thing.
Probably. The one-on-one thing?
Yeah.
Like a king of the court type situation?
Yeah.
All right. Salute to Tillman Fertitta. And talk to him nice. You now have to call him Mr. Ambassador. U.S. Ambassador to Italy and San Marino. That was confirmed yesterday, by the Senate. And so Tillman Fertitta will have a lot more on his hands in addition to, I guess, all of his business dealings. Although I feel like then he's probably going to have to focus on that. Concern is probably too much, but like, does this at all make you think about what the Rockets as an organization, like how that is handled? Or do you just feel comfortable with the hierarchy that's been set up? Because, I mean, obviously, Rafael Stone has his situation. Then, of course, Tillman's sons,
Patrick,
particularly Patrick, are so hugely involved already that it feels like there's a stability even if Tillman is off doing these things on behalf of our nation.
Yeah, it doesn't concern me in the least bit. I feel like Patrick, I respect that guy a lot, the commitment that he's made. I think he does a lot of things there. Tillman is sort of like the final sounding board. And wink, wink, he'll still be the final sounding board, even if it's an international phone call. You know,
sure. Yeah, because I feel like that if you are in that particular place where it's just, hey, let me run this by you right quick, it's less of the involvement.
Yes.
I think the thing that I typically, or I've thought about it more recently with like Woody Johnson of the Jets, who was, 5 years ago, 6 years ago, the ambassador to the United Kingdom for the United States. And mm-hmm. I feel like that takes you away from some more of those day-to-days as much as an owner typically is. And it feels like he's already in a place where there's enough of the hierarchy in place that'll handle up by themselves. No, I think that's fair, right?
Yeah.
All right. And so, yeah, salute there. I did. You know what? I teased the Bill Belichick UNC stuff. Let's get to that in our niche sports report. I think let's do that at 12:40 because I think there's more space to talk about.
Lot to bite into there.
What the hell is happening?
Lot to chew on.
832 says Ryder Cup is USA versus the world, and it works very well. I just think that that's a different. It's a different audience that looks at this in a different way. I'm not sure that the basketball audience sees that as moving, and I think that it's fair. It's still also going to come back to the play on the court, and if that galvanizes the players as well to do something outsized when inputs mm-hmm. and stimuli that make it so that they're kind of revving back at times on the governor, right? Like, I think that those things still exist, so you might get a similar style of game for folks that have been clamoring for hard-nosed playoff type basketball in the All-Star weekend. I just don't think that you're getting that just because you slapped the flag on the shoulder.
And I do.
Okay. We'll see if they get there, but apparently they're considering it. Yeah. You're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. Coming up next, what's the most reasonable path to a Rockets Game 5 victory? And could it possibly be just staying on course? We'll talk about it next.